There was no shortage of news stories in 2016, but today we want to know what you thought the biggest story of the last year was. This hour on the West Side, I'll be joined by two members of Western Wisconsin's news media to get their take on the past year's events and the coverage. But we'd love to hear from you as well. What are your thoughts on the past year's local, regional, state, and national news stories? 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Joining me in studio are two veterans of the print media. First, I'd like to welcome Gary Johnson. He is a reporter who has worked covering local news at the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram since 1986. Last year, when Don Hoopsher retired, Gary was tapped to be the Leader-Telegram's newest editor. Gary Johnson, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Also joining me is Tom Giffey. He is the editorial and managing editor for the Chippewa Valley's Alternative News Weekly, Volume 1. Prior to that, Tom was a reporter and editorial page editor for the Leader-Telegram. Tom Giffey, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. We were going to have Aaron Rohde of WQOW on the program, but he is not feeling well today. We wish him a speedy recovery. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. If you're still in bed reveling, then just you can post on Facebook if what you thought the biggest news story of 2016 was. And looking ahead, what do you think 2017 will bring? Anyone's guess is what I would say. So with that, let's get right into it. Gentlemen, I'm going to start in no particular order. I'm going to start with Gary Johnson. So at the newspaper, you're in the business of sending reporters out and into danger and to get the stories. What do you think was the biggest story based on either readership or your personal opinion for 2016?
Well, certainly, I try not to send them out into too much danger.
Right.
Eau Claire's a relatively safe place to live, so. And I think the fact that our number one news story that was in yesterday's Leader-Telegram, voted on by our editors and reporters, the Marshfield Clinic's plans for a new hospital. You know, it's good news to some, it's bad news to some. Certainly, it was controversial.
Yeah.
But I think that's certainly, in all the years, I grew up in the Chippewa Valley, went to college here. There's been, you know, two main hospitals and others since. But anytime there's a new hospital, it has a huge impact on the community, on other hospitals, on people's options for seeking health care. So that certainly, I completely agree with that choice, and that I would certainly vote for that as my top story as well.
Tom Giffey, what about yourself? What did you think? And I want to we'll go back to the hospital thing in just a bit, but
sure. Well, actually, I would. I mean, from a kind of a hard news perspective, I think that would have to be the biggest thing that happened around here, mm-hmm. as well as perhaps the local impact of the election. But that will be, I suppose, we can spend the whole hour talking about that.
Yeah, we'll spend
that
a good
will
part
that
of
will
it.
Certainly. I think that will be felt down the road. From our perspective, kind of covering entertainment and culture, there was no single outstanding above it all story. You know, we don't vote in the same way. The way we do it is we brainstorm and come up with a list of things we want to touch on, and then the past few years we've done a year-end quiz, mm-hmm. which is sort of our sort of goofier way of exploring some of the same topics. But it was interesting to go through that process and to go through the process. Now we're preparing like a year ahead issue. And a lot of the things we had flagged as, oh, these are going to be the big stories of 2016 locally, they're still going to be the big stories of 2017, especially mm-hmm. kind of the cultural issues, the issues of development. You know, we've had the Confluence Project on the agenda. I guess culturally you could look at finally breaking ground on that project this past September, October, I believe
right.
it was, as perhaps the biggest cultural story of the year. But again, they're going to be building that all through 2017. It's not going to open until 2018. So, and we talk about other downtown development projects as being certainly in Eau Claire at least big deals. We've had a parking ramp open. We had mm-hmm. several downtown hotels finally open after having that sort of.
In the Jamf building, they finished that. Was that?
I think
that
was the year before. Actually,
oh, okay.
It's one of these things. It's like, oh yeah, it's good. We're going to have hotels, and okay, now the hotels are finally opened, and we've got to get people to fill them. So, mm-hmm. Anyone who's followed kind of the redevelopment of Eau Claire, as well as, you know, they're doing a lot of things downtown Chippewa as well, it's a long process. It's hard to say, okay, here is the day that, that this is the most important thing that's happened. So,
yeah, the development is, I don't know, as far as hard news, it's up there, but it's really amazing what happened in Altoona, in downtown Eau Claire, and Chippewa Falls with their River View Park that they're planning. Isn't that the name of it, I believe?
Yeah.
It's really, it's exciting to see all this stuff happening.
I agree with Tom, too. Every year I look at our top 10 list and it has downtown development, or River Prairie development.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I agree it will continue over and over, and you'll see, okay, does it move down this next year to Menominee Street for the Sonitag development?
Right.
Now that the Confluence Project, the fundraising is kind of wrapping up, certainly UW-Eau Claire is going to lean in that direction to the Sonitag Project. That's the next big thing down there. But it all kind of works in. It's all kind of downtown related. We've got Block 7 that hasn't been that's the surface parking downtown. That what's going to go in there? Will there be a grocery store? Will there be more residential, more businesses? That's a prime spot down there. That's in the next year, the year after that. I think that's going to just keep going and going.
And just speaking of you know, the Sonitag reminded me of this university. The foundation has really bitten off so much. With the, you know, the Confluence fundraising, you've got Blue Gold Radio now, which is a big deal. And also the Sonitag, they said, well, we're going to fundraise for that once we fundraised for every other thing under the sun. It's really amazing.
I mean, yeah, even in an era of, well, I guess maybe it's indicative of that. We've obviously had tight university budgets mm-hmm. for quite a number of years now, but through the foundation and some private donations and so forth, they've been able to do a lot of things. As you said, the Sonitag Center, which is, you know, their desire to build kind of a replacement, so to speak, for Zorn Arena down on Menominee Street here in Eau Claire. The Blue Gold Radio, which was a radio station donated from a private company to the mm-hmm. foundation and is now kind of a student-oriented, student-run station. You also have a lot of looking forward a bit, they just cut down a bunch of trees on campus. That's always that always gets people excited. But they're going to be doing a lot of work on the lower campus area, as far as beautifying it and doing some kind of underground work. But it's certainly going to change what the campus looks like over the next year or two.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Let us know what you think the top news story of 2016 is, or what you think we'll be covering as the news media in 2017. 1-800-228-5615. You can also check out the Westside Facebook page. Leave a comment or a question there. Going back quickly to the Marshfield Clinic, bad blood between Marshfield and Sacred Heart, Gary Johnson?
Well, we're talking two blocks from Sacred Heart. They like to build a brand new hospital. Sacred Heart obviously isn't going to be in favor of that.
Right. Beyond that, they had the agreement for so many years.
They did. They did. They've kind of moved away from that now, though. Certainly over the years, they couldn't come to agreements, so they moved on separately. It was interesting, the Plan Commission dealing with the Cancer Center approval first and then the hospital approval. A lot of people spoke up at each of those meetings saying, you know, we don't need this. You know, or they're not going to provide the services that this community needs. The Plan Commission, it's their job to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you tell somebody that a new business can't come in? You know, a new car dealership wouldn't be turned down, I guess, because it's two blocks away from a different one.
Yeah.
That they dealt with what they needed to deal with. They didn't really have a lot of other options, whether they were for it or against it, mm-hmm. you know, because they dealt with zoning. They dealt with, is this a proper use of this land? You know, they couldn't get into the emotional end of it. Well, no, this could really hurt Sacred Heart, or this could really hurt Mayo Clinic. This would be good for Marshfield Clinic. They kind of let the businesses have their way. You know, let's see what happens.
Right. I did see an interesting take on the whole planning and zoning committee thing in the Eau Claire Journal, which is the conservative, I guess, newspaper or the alternative paper, whatever you want to call it. They were saying that the Planning Commission shouldn't have any say over anything, like as far as a business where it chooses to locate. But that's neither here nor there. So what about this concentration of Tom Giffey, of hospitals? I mean, I'm new to the Chippewa Valley. I came around 2010, but I don't – it seems like there's – what.
Well, right. I mean, we've obviously so have Mayo and Sacred Heart, which have been here for many, many years. And you have Oak Leaf, which was a very nice new facility out there in River Prairie and Altoona. And now with Marshfield, I mean, driving to this – the broadcast studio here, I drove by both of them just a minute ago. And it's – that's going to be strange. I mean, and – just looking at kind of from a 10,000-foot view, you know, competition is supposed to drive down prices. We generally have not seen that in healthcare, especially you know, there are groups that come out with, you know, comparative costs of healthcare around the state. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, most recently Eau Claire ended up near the top again, as it has, you know, when I was writing editorials about that 6-8 years ago. I mean, it was the same thing. So I – personally, I'm skeptical that it's going to have an impact downward on healthcare costs, but that remains to be seen. Yeah. So,
with that, let's go to the phone. We've got some folks calling in. Keep trying if you can't get through. Otherwise, you can post on the Westside Facebook page. Oh, and that person has left us. All right. You're on the air on the Westside. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'd like to talk about the Blue Ox Music Festival. I think that's the best story of 2016.
All right. Blue Ox, got it. What do you like about it?
I like that it's Wisconsin, a lot of Wisconsin artists. It's in town, more or less, and it just seems like a really fun thing for years to come.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for that. I appreciate the call. 1-800-228-5615. Tom, I'm going to defer to you on this.
I have not been out to Blue Ox. It's one of the few music festivals I haven't checked out, but yeah, they were in their second year. The Eau Claire Music and Arts Festival, which is on the same grounds, out of the Country Jam grounds, was in its second year this past year. So not as many headlines of, oh boy, we've got this new thing. But both of them, from
successful.
All accounts, were very successful. We've had for 20-plus years now some you know, strong music festivals in the area with Country Jam and Rockfest and Country Fest, and now we've added to that. We've got 6 now, at least, at last count, as well as lots of secondary events and smaller festivals that happen in the region. So, you know, our magazine, Volume 1, kind of declared it ourselves the Music Festival of the North.
Yeah, that was a great
year and a half ago. And that has, I guess, we kind of stuck our necks out there a little bit, but events have only kind of proven that sticks, and that it has really become part of the identity of the area. With the Confluence coming online here in a couple years, I think that's only going to be more so. But with something like Blue Ox, you have a lot of homegrown acts that pop up, a little more so, a little less so at the Eau Claire Fest. But obviously, your big headliner is a homegrown act.
Right.
You can't forget that, and lots of related musicians that have come and gone from this place. And it's certainly exciting, I think, for many different reasons, from an economic development reason. I don't remember off the top of my head, but, you know, when you ask somebody like Visit Eau Claire to crunch the numbers, it's amazing the millions and millions of dollars that those festivals bring to us. And you look at that impact is starting to continue out through the year when you have other sorts of musical events other kinds of entertainment opportunities that are happening throughout the year, and it's kind of becomes a sustainable part of the economy.
And it really brought in the Blue Ox and the Eau Claire Music Festival brings in a different musical genres, two different.
Right.
I mean, you've got, it's so eclectic, the Eau Claire Music Fest, you can't really pinpoint it, but the bluegrass folks, I mean, bluegrass is hugely popular, and it's a nice, I think it was a nice addition to the you know, you've got your standard, your classic rock, and it's kind of funny, some of the bands that are playing at Rockfest now that I remember listening to when I was in high school showing up. And
well, it was classic rock 20 years ago is now what was on.
That's the oldies now. Yeah. But anyhow, it's two nice additions. And Gary Johnson, the economic impact of arts and culture and these new festivals. It really is putting us on the map.
Oh, I think it's a wonderful thing. I mean, the Blue Ox, it's great. I mean, our reporters go out to cover these events and they just come back. It's like, this is just the coolest thing. I mean, mm-hmm. we've had people already volunteer, which is the first time, to go cover some events. Because they're like, I mean, this is, it's a happening, mm-hmm. you know, the Eau Claire event, the Blue Ox. They just think it's bringing in people, it's bringing in acts that you just don't see elsewhere. It brings in people from everywhere, internationally, you know, from Europe.
Absolutely.
And it's fun. It produces an atmosphere that people just want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the, I guess, if we had ranked here at Volume 1 top stories, one of them would have been a story about Eau Claire, namely Time Magazine doing a piece in there. I forget exactly what the title of the special issue, but it was, I think, What is Right About America? Mm-hmm. And I'm blanking on his name. Gary, you probably remember. Yeah. He was a UW Eau Claire alum who had gone on to be an editor at Time Life and came back and visited and kind of wrote about how this community has transformed. And a lot of that has to do with the arts and culture and kind of a can-do attitude in the community. And it's nice. I mean, it's sort of self-aggrandizing to say, hey, look at this. But, hey, we could all use some good news now and again, and especially in this past year. And I think it's great to get that kind of recognition for the community on a big stage that people are looking on us as – hey, this is somewhere to visit. This is not just some sleepy little out-of-the-way river town.
Right.
And you couple that with what's happening downtown. You know, it's all kind of the renaissance, you know, of Eau Claire. I mean, you've got these music festivals. You've got your downtown, which used to be an area, you know, that a lot of people didn't go to. Mm-hmm. You know, where now, I mean, there's brand-new buildings. There's cool buildings. Mm-hmm. There's more going on all the time. It's bringing people, you know, the New Year's Eve, you know, the lanterns, the fireworks and everything. They're going to light up the bridge. You know, this is all more things to bring people downtown, bring people to Eau Claire. I mean, you kind of mix that in, you know, with the Lismore Hotel for your tourists are coming in for festivals. It all kind of meshes together to just as Eau Claire remakes itself.
Very quickly, let's talk about hotels. We've got there were zero downtown hotels just a couple of years ago, and now we've got two. Both describe themselves as boutique hotels. I mean, there's definitely a lot of style going on in there. I think, if I remember correctly, I had Zach Halmstead of Jamf Software on the program, and he mentioned sinking something like $20 million into the Lismore to rehab it from what it had been, you know, the broken-down Ramada. It's and then you've got the Green Tree, which I know Nick Meyer is
part. Yeah, my boss is one of the co-owners.
Full disclosure.
Yeah, full disclosure here. Yeah, and that's right across from where I sit, you know.
Right,
so it's been interesting to watch that project going on.
Right. But a lot of investment. And from,
yeah,
from
a lot of
it
investment.
Seems like the young money almost.
Yeah, I mean, you have a number of people. I mean, Zach Halmstead of Jamf Software was involved in both of those projects. In the Oxbow project, you also have Ben Richgruber, who's with the Art Center. You mm-hmm. have Justin Vernon of Bon Iver. So you have kind of a 30-something crowd that says, hey, we want to not only do something with our money, but do something that's going to have something of a cultural impact. And both of those establishments are, you know, beautiful, and they've mm-hmm. got great dining options in them now and are kind of adding to the nightlife a little more. The Lismore, you know, in particular, you had a great need for that convention space, kind of tying back into the building the Marshfield Hospital that's going to take down the Plaza Hotel,
right,
which, if I'm not mistaken, had more convention space than any other property in town. So you had among the Lismore, the Oxbow, Staybridge Suites, the new hotel downtown Chippewa. I think there were five or six that opened within a year.
Yeah.
400 some rooms, but then you close the Plaza and you've gone backward a couple hundred. So, you know, two steps forward, one step back, et cetera, et cetera. But
right.
We are in a place where we're becoming more of a destination. And I think that the key now will be keeping those places full and vital and active because obviously they were that at one time, and there was cyclically kind of fell backwards.
Yeah. How big of a challenge do you think, Gary Johnson, I'm asking you to predict the future, which I'm going to ask both of you to do throughout this hour, but you know, that is a big challenge. Is there's a lot of excitement. There's this confluence. There's this promise of a draw downtown coming. So it makes sense to build the hotels. But, you know, what you were around to see the decline of, say, the Ramada. Or do you, what kind of forces played into that? And what should be people, what could we watch for as signs that that might happen again?
Well, I think that certainly the Ramada, there were a variety of things. I mean, it just kind of it deteriorated. You know, over the years, I mean, where people just simply didn't go there anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and yes, Zach Homestead, you know, decided to invest in his hometown, as Justin Vernon did as well.
Yeah.
And invest to make sure they knew that hotels were needed downtown, especially if the Confluence project was going to take shape. I mean, they can kind of feed off each other. You know, once the Confluence gets up, you know, there's going to be lots of events going on there. I think New Year's Eve probably was indicative of what can happen at the Lismore. I mean, I wasn't there personally, but I'm told it was, you know, sold out from, you know, and everybody, it was the place to go, mm-hmm. you know, on New Year's Eve. I mean, a New Year's Eve in downtown Eau Claire hasn't been like that for a long, long time, you know, and I've been around here a while. You know, you throw in the parade and everything, I think it just kind of gives that a buzz, that excitement of that downtown is a place to go now.
800-228-5615. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the 2016 News Year in Review. I'm joined by Tom Giffey of Volume 1 and Gary Johnson of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. We'd love to hear what you think was the biggest story of 2016 or what reporters will likely be chasing into the new year. 1-800-228-5615. Also, check out the Westside Facebook page. You can leave a question or a comment there.
Support for WPR comes from Steep & Brew, a Wisconsin coffee roaster dedicated to delivering truly fresh, premium coffee to local grocers. Coffee roasted today is delivered within 72 hours. Steep & Brew, coffee done right. More at steepandbrew.com. Support also comes from the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. Author, sports commentator, and Green Bay Packer legend Jerry Kramer appears at the Mabel Tainter, Friday, January 13th. Tickets are at mabeltainter.org.
Happy New Year, everybody. This is Rich Kramer with the West Side. Thank you for listening to us this January 2nd morn. We're talking with local reporters about the biggest stories of 2016, about how the press managed to cover it, how well they did or how poorly they did it, and also we're going to look ahead to 2017. If you've got a question or a comment, or if you've got a top news story you'd like to share, give us a call. 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines, and we'd love to hear from you. All right. April was a busy time for reporters in Eau Claire and then the Chippewa Valley, Wisconsin as a whole. Let's talk about the day the presidential primary came to Eau Claire. Sanders rally, Bernie Sanders rally, Trump rally in the afternoon, Clinton rally in between. What was it like for your newsroom, Gary Johnson, to try to cover all this?
Crazy day. We could kind of see, you know, two or three days before that, it looked like the perfect storm was happening here. You know, we hear rumors of it here and there, and you bring out all your reporters. You know, you have to be on Twitter from there, post to our website. We had separate reporters, photographers at each event, you know, and then you start talking about, okay, they're all going to have to go on the front page here, and we're talking equal time.
Right.
You know, okay, what size are those photos going to be? You know, we've got, these are the three major players in that campaign, all came to town at once before the primary. Mm-hmm. It was exciting. It was very exciting. I mean, we had reporters who literally, again, volunteered to go out and said, I would love to tweet from there. Yeah. I'd love to go to all of them and tweet from there. I'd like to write a column. I'd like to cover this, that. You know, it was a great time. I mean, it's exciting. You're glad it doesn't happen every day because it's just crazy. And you know, because it's that selection was so scrutinized, I mean, you got to play fair here. You know, we got these candidates are coming in, and it's a tight race. But it was overall, it was a great time.
Yeah, busy. busy for me. I mean, the National Public Radio wanted spots on everything. They were just hungry for anything. So I was racing back here, back to the studios, and running back to the events. And then what drove me crazy is when a campaign was late. Like, I think it was the Clinton campaign that was about 40 minutes late. And I'm looking at the clock and, you know, just my head is spinning. Tom Giffey, you know, you guys focus on arts yeah. and culture, but I'm sure, did you or any of the folks cover a Sanders rally or a Clinton rally?
We didn't cover them per se. We actually had photographer. Again, you know, we have various contributing photographers, and a number of them, I think, just volunteered, like, hey, if I could get a press pass, I'd love to take pictures.
Yeah.
Because these are historic events. So mm-hmm. we were able to get some good photo coverage. But as far as covering the nitty gritty of the political scene, we don't do that, at least with on the national level. And I guess this time around, maybe I feel pretty good. I was able to stay out of that. I've covered enough elections.
I bet.
And I know what it's like, but I bet, you know, that those were huge events. And they just show, I guess, a little bit of the, not only the, I guess, the electoral impact that we can have here in Wisconsin, especially in this region, when you see how close it is in these big elections on a statewide level, whether it's governor or president or senator. I mean, this has been kind of the swing area in many cases over the years.
A media market that is paid attention to by campaigns, that's for sure. I'll just say for my part, I went to all the rallies, and what I geek out about the most is seeing the traveling press corps. When I see, oh, there's someone, I know that person from the New York Times, or, oh, there's so-and-so from CNN. It's kind of neat. Also, kind of neat to see them all scrambling, and they're all humans, and they're all under deadline just like we are.
Yeah.
So they're not superstars.
My favorite, this goes back a few years, but in 2004, John Kerry did a rally up in a cow pasture up in Chippewa County, to see all the national press and their high heels tromping through the mud was it was fun for a Wisconsin boy.
Well, when we came to, you know, October, November, when Donald Trump came again, that was interesting for our reporters. By then, you know, it was kind of a frenzy by the time we got so close to Election Day. And when Donald Trump came to Zorn Arena, our reporters were in the reporter bullpen, you know, and got booed by the Trump crowd, which you know, was interesting. And
it's like a rite of passage.
Right. You know, our reporter Eric Lindquist wrote a column about it, too, just... It was a different experience, but the national media, we get booed every day.
Yeah.
So they were so completely used to it where the local reporters kind of looked around. This is a different experience.
Right. And I think what was also interesting going into that Zorn, the final Trump rally here, was the fact that a week before you had candidates like Governor or, you know, politicians like Governor Walker, even Ron Johnson, people that wouldn't really say Trump's name. Ron Johnson, a week before, wouldn't even mention him by name when I asked him. He was up here with Lindsey Graham. But yet, on the stage, they were best of friends. and I will say that also, it was interesting because when Trump would point to the audience and the audience turned around and they seemed to really love jeering the media. So we'll get into that a little bit more. First, we've got another caller. You're on the air. What's on your mind? Hello? All right, let's try this one. All right, you're on the air. What's your top news story for 2016?
Hi there. This is Christine. I'm calling from Glenwood City, and I actually live an hour from the Twin Cities and an hour from Eau Claire, and I'm a get-involved kind of person. I've been hearing hints about this revitalization that's gone in Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. So what I'm wondering is, what has been completed for 2017, and what can I expect to do in 2017, because I'd like to spend more time in Eau Claire.
Okay, all right. Well, there's a lot of new hotels that you can stay at, but what has been completed? Gary Johnson, any new stuff? We've got some new. We've got the new music festivals that we were talking about. It's kind of in the works at this point.
Yeah, it's pretty much in the works. Certainly the Confluence, now that ground is broken, that'll start to go up, but nothing different is going to happen there. But as Tom Giffey mentioned before, there's like six music festivals that people can go to, which are huge festivals. We're kind of in a in-between process right here, right now, where construction's ongoing for a lot of these things.
Right.
But obviously there's obviously there's two very nice hotels, both of which contain restaurants and
which are they're kind of a destination
eateries.
In themselves.
Yeah, I mean, ideally they're not just this is your buffet for your people staying here. No, this is these are very nice establishments mm-hmm. that could draw someone from an hour or two away just to dine.
And with live music.
Live music there. Yeah. To give a shameless plug for my own publication, we're one of the sponsors of the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series, which is bringing a lot of people downtown every Thursday night and has for years.
The sculpture tour. There's all kinds of things to do.
The sculpture tour. There are many of these things. And it's, as we say, it's sort of accumulation over the years that you add this element and that element. And it's a long-term process.
Right. It's kind of a stop and take a look. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going around.
I'm sorry, I had you muted there. What were you saying?
Will there ultimately be some kind of an indoor event center?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. The Confluence Performing Arts Center. The plan is, and the construction is underway. It would be two theaters. I think one is 1,500 seat, right? Or that's still being debated.
Yeah.
And then there's another 500?
Four or 500, a smaller theater.
So it would basically be a combination of theater space, classroom space for music students at the university. So it's something that's been debated for a while here in Eau Claire. And 4 years later, it's actually broken ground this past September, October. So
where can I get more information? Is there a website that I can reference to kind of follow this?
Is there? Tom Giffey?
any of the media in the region would do it. I mean, volume1.org is our website, and we kind of focus heavily, obviously, on the cultural scene, but you're also going to get those stories from the leadertelegram.com. As well as if you Google for Downtown Eau Claire Inc., that's the sort of the official sort of quasi-governmental agency that's involved in a lot of these things. And mm-hmm. if you get on their mailing list or follow them online, they are constantly plugging the events and the new things that are happening.
Sure. Well, thanks for calling in. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to get your top news story of 2016, or if you've got questions about what to do in Eau Claire, that you can give a call as well. 800-228-5615. So I want to talk about, and forgive me, but I'm going to try to steer it straight into politics and try to keep me from it for the rest of the hour. But we talked about the primary, Bernie Sanders. Let's talk generally about the Sanders effect or the outsider effect. And Gary Johnson, let's start with you. Sanders, didn't win with, or Sanders did win Wisconsin. Yeah,
yes.
He did win Wisconsin. Didn't take the number of delegates that he needed, of course, to be nominated for the to be the candidate for the president. But we saw a lot of folks getting really excited. That Bernie Sanders rally in April was like a rock concert, I think, comparatively speaking, compared to Clinton's rally, was much different.
It was wild times.
Yeah, it was wild times.
Yeah. I think it was different.
Why the rise of the outsider? Why so much excitement about that?
Well, I you could ask people who voted for Donald Trump the same thing.
Right.
I mean, I think it would have been extremely interesting, obviously 2020 hindsight here, to see Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where do some of those outsider votes, the people who wanted something other than the establishment, where would they have voted? I mean. I think that would have been extremely interesting.
Tom Giffey, any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there has been a building for many years in this country, in the state, just an unease and an unhappiness with politics as usual. We saw that play out in the popularity of both of those candidates. And yeah, you see there were obviously an awful lot of people that supported Hillary Clinton. She won the popular vote, of course. But nonetheless, she did not generate the kind of palpable energy that somebody like Bernie Sanders did, or even, you go back 8 years when Barack Obama was first running.
Right.
It was a similar phenomenon, to light up especially younger voters and people that might be kind of on the periphery of the electoral system and not be the kind of people that are involved in the election process. I mean, that's obviously a big part of the Trump phenomenon that surprised everybody and blindsided all the pollsters, was that there were a lot of people who, for whatever reason, were disaffected by politics but were drawn in by this.
The media got it wrong. That's what I've been told anyway, but at every Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner that I've been at. But so just speaking very quickly about, you know, Obama carried a lot of counties in western Wisconsin in 2012. 2016, 11, I think, counties flipped for Trump. Trump won by the same margins that Obama won these counties in 2012. So it was really an amazing, I think, showing that Trump had, and a lot of it was interesting because the media thought, or a lot of people were expecting Republicans not to turn out because they didn't like their candidate, but it was like the opposite of that. So why did the media get it wrong? Gary Johnson.
Well, I guess
that's a ridiculous question, but, but please.
Being from the media, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess the media getting it wrong is, it seems a little strange to me as well. I mean, because I never predicted who was going to win this presidential race. Right. I mean, all the polls were wrong. I mean, everywhere. You know, as the media, we try to cover everybody when they come to town. We try to be fair and balanced with everything. I know the media's bad in a lot of people's eyes. I mean, we're not in the highest standard right now. But, you know, I think you're talking more a little about the national media.
Yeah.
As opposed to the local media. But yeah, it was a strange time that everybody got it wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think people get that's the funny thing is about, oh, we hate the media, but, you know, oh, the local paper, the local TV station is not so bad.
Don't take it away, right?
Yeah. It's just like maybe this is a little different. You know, everybody hates Congress, but they keep electing their congressman, you know?
Like so, by 90%.
Even in this past election, I mean, incumbents do very well. So, yeah, everybody's always loved to rag on the media. I think partly it was that I mean, maybe we're in an era where polling methods really are not as valid as they used to be, in an era where everybody has gotten rid of their landline. Mm-hmm. And you had a unique situation where you had a very controversial candidate who nonetheless, you know, struck a chord with a lot of people, and maybe they were a little reluctant to say they were going to vote for him. But, I mean, even – you look at something like, you know, Nate Silver, who's, you know, the polling guru online. And, yeah, his models showed that it was – the probability was that it was going to be Clinton's. But on the flip side, well, there's still a chance. And sometimes the coin falls that way. So not as often, but yeah, that's what it happens.
One of the takeaways that I had that on election day, you know, one of the things you do as a reporter is go out, do exit polls, you know, were you excited about your choices, et cetera. The first person I asked, and it was the soundbite that I used for my story, it was just too perfect. But this gentleman, I said, how do you feel about your vote? He said, I feel sick. And I thought that was very apropos, I guess. Yeah. A lot of people were unhappy with both choices. So trust in the media, Gallup poll. In polls, you know, you can only take them as far as you can throw them nowadays. But taken in September, trust in the media fell to 32% as people that said they have a great deal of trust in the media. That trust drops even further among younger and older Americans. Local media is a little more popular, but 14% of Republicans say they trust the media. That's down as well. So do we have to do more work? Or what do you think is happening here, and what's the correct response, Gary Johnson?
Well, I think, you know, excuse me, you're being attacked every day. I mean, online has a lot to do with it. If people go to Facebook and they get their news.
He's doing air quotes, everybody.
Is it real news? Is it fake news? What's the source of this news? I mean, everybody believes what they want to believe. You know, so many times, I mean, I just saw this on Facebook and I pass it on to my friends and my friends and my friends. Well, what if it's a fake story? Mm-hmm. I mean, so then if they maybe only watch Fox News or only watch MSNBC, they want to hear what they want to hear. So if the media, air quotes again, isn't telling them the same thing, we don't trust them. That we know it's rigged. We know that they have an agenda here, that they want to get this story across or that candidate elected. I mean, the online is just, it's a whole different world now because of that.
And I want to follow up with you, Gary Johnson. It is a whole new world. There's so many different options online to get news or air quote news, whatever you want to call it. But at the same time, you're seeing a kind of a decline in the traditional media. We were talking before the show, newspapers used to have much bigger reach. The newspapers have declined in size. Newsrooms have declined in size. Radio, I mean, you've got a reporter who will work for like Clear Channel stations in a whole state or a whole region. And so is the business that we're in changing completely? And are we, how do we react to it? Real quick, I'll come to you, Tom.
Yeah, where do we go from here is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah, newspaper circulation nationwide has gone down since the birth of the Internet. Mm-hmm. People, certainly younger people under 30, are used to getting their news for free. And they think, you know, you shouldn't have to pay for it. Well, reporters have to eat. We pay people to go gather news to give you accurate information that you may not get other places. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's... It's difficult with all the mergers going on, you know, reporters losing jobs. I mean, I think it's extremely important to get real news, to get non-fake news. And I think there's always a place, certainly in a community this size, for a daily newspaper, because who's going to cover the city council, the school board? Who's going to tell you what you need to know, what's going on in your community?
Tom Giffey, champing at the bit.
Am I? No, I totally agree with Gary. I mean, it is, as someone who's sort of a little bit outside that hard news realm for the most part, but is still an avid consumer of media and following politics, it has been just disturbing to see that the energy expended against disliking the media, and now people can choose whatever flavor of reinforcement for their pre-existing opinions. I don't know what the solution is. I hope that the pendulum eventually swings in the other direction. I mean, it's funny. You hear the term fake news now, which originally applied to like literally made up things that mm-hmm. people would put on Facebook just to get clicks. You know,
right.
They're making money off of their ads, off of their website. But now it's being used to apply to, well, this is a legitimately reported story. It just makes your person not look as good.
Right.
But then you can dismiss it as fake news. I don't know where we go from here. Hopefully, I mean, people eventually realize that, you know, objectivity still exists and that there are still hopefully the mainstream outlets or even alternative outlets that practice it. And people develop a certain degree of media literacy. But it's disturbing just as somebody who watches this to see that happen.
I wish I had a time machine, because I imagine a lot of these conversations were being had back in the day of the yellow journalism, you know, when you had a lot of newspapers that their sole goal was to further a certain interest.
Oh, and that's all. I mean, you've always had partisan media. You've
right,
had,
right.
You know, I read editorials for years. You've always had people that are trying to express their opinion, but you know, in the Leader Telegram, the opinions are on the page that says opinions on
right,
the top.
Right.
You know, hopefully, and you don't get that anymore in all these alternative media. The opinion is the news, and there is not a sense that, okay, we're going to go out and report the facts, and then maybe at the end we'll draw some conclusions, or we'll allow you to draw conclusions. It's like, no, we go with our pre-existing conclusions, and we pick the facts that fit those.
There you have it. The media says the media is still important right here on the West Side. You heard it here first. Let's take our final break. We'll be back with a short wrap-up of the 2016 News Year Review and what to look ahead towards in 2017. This is the West Side.
From private prisons to toxic schools, this year, Reveal investigated stories that uncover a world you may never have been aware of, and people like white supremacist Richard Spencer.
I want to be in a world where there are white societies, white nations, what could be called an ethnostate.
A look back at our top stories of the year on the next Reveal.
Tonight at 7 on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering express loans, personal loans for ATVs, snowmobiles, campers, and other recreational vehicles. More information is at wisconsincu.org.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking with local reporters in western Wisconsin about the news year in review, the 2016 top stories, and what to look ahead for in 2017. If you've got a question or a comment or a top news story you'd like to share, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We can still take a couple more. So we've gotten into the Well, all right. I guess Donald Trump. How about Donald Trump? Nationally, do you think that was one of the top stories of 2016, gentlemen? Tom Giffey?
Well, yeah. And, I mean, his election internationally was a shock. It's going to have any presidential election, obviously. But he is an outlier in so many ways of what we've had in the past and has already caught. I mean, he hasn't taken office and there are international repercussions to his election. I can't imagine any media organization has said that was not the top story in the world. That was
right.
Sort of filling number one on the ballot there is pretty simple in terms of that.
And looking ahead, the way Trump, he really knows how to use the media to his advantage. And also he uses something called Twitter that completely bypasses the media. So how do reporters deal with that? Gary Johnson.
This is going to be a very interesting administration. Will there be press conferences? I mean, or will it just be 140 character comments for the next 4 years? It'll be interesting. It's certainly, if you're working for the Washington Post or somebody in the White House press corps, it's going to be a heck of a 4 years trying to figure out how you're going to get information from everybody. Will it change? Mm-hmm. I think we talk about the trickle down theory here to the local level too from the Trump administration. How Obamacare. How is that going to shake out? Medicaid funding. There's a lot of things, energy policies that will all have impacts on the Chippewa Valley here. It's not, this is happening in Washington. This is whatever happens in Washington affects what happens in the rest of the country, including the Eau Claire area.
Sounds like we've stepped into the look ahead at 2017 portion of the show, and I agree. The Affordable Care Act, what Congress, the battle between maybe Trump and the Congress on that. There's some calling for immediate repeals. Donald Trump said, didn't he, that he wanted to make sure there's a replacement first. I mean, that'll be interesting to watch. And as far as the energy industry, we're seeing one of my beats is industrial sand mining or frac sand mining. A lot of mines are starting to hire back. They're reopening. So maybe they won't. The people I talk to won't say definitively that it's a Trump effect, but because the recovery was kind of seen on the horizon anyway. But
right. Well, and you wrote down during the break gas prices on a piece of paper.
Why are gas prices higher in Eau Claire than everywhere else?
Yeah.
Giffey.
Oh, geez. I thought we solved that with Woodman's coming in. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously good. Elections have consequences,
sure
as they
do.
Like to say. And I think, although with rising gas prices, that's what's going to drive more sand mining.
Yeah.
Because there is more incentive to produce gas because you get more money for it, and then you have more gas, and then the price goes down, and it's cyclical, like any kind of energy thing.
Right. So looking ahead, we've got a few more minutes here. What do you think will be the top story? And if we run out of things to talk about, I'm going to go back to 2016. But 2017, what are you going to be watching for, maybe in arts and culture or whatever? Tom Giffey.
Well, I mean, one thing is you've got Justin Vernon, hometown boy made good.
We get to find out if he wins another
Grammy.
Yeah.
Which was, I guess, maybe something of a surprise.
Was that?
Maybe not a surprise anymore. I don't know. It is still surreal, at least from my perspective, to see somebody who came from here, who was just a guy that went to Memorial High School in UW-Claire and that half the town still knows because, they you know, played football with them, or his second cousin once removed, to see him on that level. He has certainly made celebrity his own, made being at that level. He does it by his own rules. He has stayed in his hometown and started to invest here. But, I mean, just simply seeing him on that stage again will be impressive.
He's up against some really tough acts.
Up against David Bowie.
Yeah.
Who's kind of a gimme when you look back, looking back at 2016, you know, one of the many high-profile celebrities we lost. But I think that win or lose in that context, it's still a big thing for this region. I mean, the fact that you have someone of this prominence who sits on a completed album and then releases it to his fans in his hometown, you know, on the stage that he has created, you know, it's hard to minimize the importance of that culturally.
Right. Real quick, were you at the listening party that they had outside of the State Theater?
I was not, no.
Because there was this cryptic message. I called you, actually.
Yes.
Trying to find out what it was all about, and there was about a couple hundred people, and they stood around and basically they looked at newspaper.
And they played, they played a cassette of the record.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I have a friend, short story here, who was there, you know, a 30-something person, and the cassettes have stopped. And I think a lot of the younger people were, what do we do now?
Don't even say
she went up and switched the cassette.
Oh, that's great. Gary Johnson, what do you see as, you know, regional, local, nationwide? What's the big thing that you're going to be having your reporters keep eyes on?
Well, certainly, you know, we have some ongoing cases here in the court system. You know, the UW Stout student.
Yes.
Who was killed.
Hussein Saeed El Nadi, still waiting on a suspect, announcement.
Authorities say they have a suspect. They say it was not a hate crime as far as the information they have. I certainly think here shortly after, now that we're into the new year, that will happen soon. There's a variety of other things. Certainly on the development front, I think you're going to see River Prairie. You drive by there any day, there's more buildings going up every day.
Right.
And downtown, again, that it'll keep going. I think you'll see the confluence just keep everything just moving forward.
All right, and the Sonntag development down on Menominee Street. Lots to look at. Thank you so much to my guests, Tom Giffey of Volume 1 and Gary Johnson of the Leader Telegram. Great conversation. Thanks to those who called in and to those who listened. I'm Rich Kramer. If you missed part of the program, check out our online archives at WPR.org. Thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, Henry Lippold, and of course Dean Collenbeck and Debbie Brown for keeping the trains on time. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.